discussion number 12707, Captain Frank Bruce, Reel 3.
Captain H.C.F. Bruce, Reel 3. What happened to you after you'd signed on the 3rd of October, Mr. Bruce?
Well, before we do that, could I just go back a bit to the bit where we were talking about the OTC? It's come to my notice through some old correspondence that there were other aspects, for instance, tactical exercise without troops, that we did in Weardale, which was really role-playing in a series of varying situations at the level of platoon commander.
What kind of role-playing did that entail?
Taking the part of platoon commander under whoever was taking the exercise as the company commander. It was at that sort of level.
And the kind of exercises that you were doing, what were those?
Oh, the standard sort of things. Attack, defence, withdrawal, that sort of thing.
Is there a standard laid down, a system laid down whereby you could attack in certain ways or recommended to attack in certain ways? Or did it vary according to the conditions?
Varied very much according to the terrain. And even to the extent of saying that your platoon is now down to two-thirds of its strength or half of its strength. How are you going to cope in such and such a situation? So it was a little bit more than just drills and annual camps. However, to go back to your question, the reception unit was at the Newcastle end of Durham University. I may have been helped a little by the fact that the Vice Chancellor of Durham University was on the selection board, and I was in the boat club at Durham, and he was one of our coaches, so we knew each other to start with. I very nearly didn't pass the medical. I think my chest measurement was about 1/8 of an inch on the right side. I think I weighed then, ideal Cox's weight in the boat club, about 7 stone 10. However, the outcome was, we'll let you know when we can, when you have to report. Go back to college in the meantime. I had to, as a matter of fact. I'd failed Latin in the second year exams, and about the 25th of September I had to resit it. Fortunately, I got through. So that time was partly swatting up Latin for that. It was partly making blackout shutters for home. I think term resumed early October. And then I got word that I had to report at Dunbar on the 8th of December. I suppose I left college about a fortnight before.
How were you informed?
Well, now, I've got lots of bits and pieces, but I haven't got any of that correspondence. It was by correspondence. I should probably have said earlier on that in the June, was it June of 39, I would have been a militiaman. But it was deferred because I was in the middle of a course at the university. I think some of my fellows who stayed on at college afterwards, I don't think they were called up till probably middle of 1940, something like that. Anyway, 8th of December, and I arrive at Dunbar. The Roxburgh Hotel had been requisitioned, And we had no sooner sat down to our first army tea meal than the air raid warning went, and we were whistled out to trenches further up the road. What next?
Had you been given a unit? What regimental unit that you were going into?
No, not at that stage. I had a number. I suppose it was because of my connection with Durham University. I'd been given a DLI number, which was 4457585. I didn't realise that, actually, until I got discharge papers, which showed that number. At the end of the OCTU course, it was 165 Officer Cadet Training Unit. We were billeted in various places, mainly requisitioned hotels, but of course there was a big barracks in Dunbar. And looking back on it, it was... Let me go back and refer to the OTC business, which to a certain extent involved training at an officer level. Looking back on it, my impression now was that the greater part of the months at Dunbar were to put one in the picture as to if one did pass the course and get a commission, put one in the picture as to what the men had to put up to. We spent a heck of a long time drilling, not in uniform, winter of 40, winter of 39, and the early spring of 1940, on the seafront at Dunbar, in sports jacket and flannels. No overcoats allowed, and it was pretty grim, that. Bayonet fighting, route marching, digging trenches, which incidentally faced inland with their back to the beach north of Dunbar.
Were these the First World War type of trench?
Yes, yes. Yes, all the various types of, learned all about parapets and parados and revetments with various kinds of whatever happened to be handy or supplied with corrugated iron, XPM sheets, hurdles, what have you.
Had you been given uniforms?
Not till the January of 1940.
So was all the marching and the digging being done in civilian?
The digging came a bit later, but the original drill efforts and the early route marches were in civvies. We did get battle dress in probably about the January. And on route marches, it was very necessary to wear pyjama trousers under it, although otherwise the unaccustomed surge tended to rub one raw in delicate places. But everything seemed to be geared to that. I don't think I realised it at the time. I thought it was part of a toughening up process. PT at some ungodly hour in the morning. They did supply us with a very patriotic PT kit, which was white, red band around the neck and the arms, armlets, and navy blue shorts. Miles we ran. It was mostly running. But the whole place packed up on the 24th of December, and we all went on leave. And we had to be back on New Year's Eve. Royal Scots Company Sergeant Major in the whatever company it was at the Roxburgh Hotel, and all Scots Regiment instructors, NCOs and officers Company commander was KOSB. Our particular officer for our squad was HLI. Throughout the unit, we had mainly Scottish instructors. I had a couple of bods from the Honourable Artillery Company. Can't remember the CO's name. But anyway, we got back New Year's Eve, and they danced, played the pipes, and knocked back a fair amount of the good old whiskey during the course of their New Year's celebrations. The sergeant major wasn't very happy about the blackout at one of the windows, so he fired at it. Get that light out. And then we all had to turn out for a parade on the New Year's Day, and they were pretty part-worn. There was one chap, he'd been caught in the reserve. He had 3 weeks to do in the reserve when war broke out. His name was Parry. He said he was a Cornishman, and he was in the Black Watch. And he was the only man who turned out on parade wearing a greatcoat. What had happened was he'd still a bit fuddled the next morning, and he got his order of dressing wrong. He got his big ammunition boots on before his trews, and they were pretty well worn, and he put his boot through the seat. There was a whispered conversation with the company sergeant major. So I made him take his greatcoat off, and this poor beggar was standing with a foot of khaki shirt hanging out of his trousers in front of the parade. However, what happened next wasn't so funny. We would have been at practice, gentlemen. And they lined us up with arms akimbo like this, a long line. And all the NCO instructors lined up some distance away. Scabbards on the bayonets. Right, gentlemen, I recommend that you stand still, perfectly still, because they whipped the scabbards off. Ran in, leapt in from about 6 feet away, and, as he said, just the requisite penetration, sir. There. And we did stand still. That was New Year's Day, 1940. I'm a bit vague about dates and events after that.
The uniform you'd been given was a Scots uniform, wasn't it?
No, it was standard battle dress.
And
We wore a field service cap with a white braided band. That was the only distinction.
And the treatment of your trainer, the people who were training you, was that in accord with the usual officer training unit treatment from NCOs who were taking you?
Well, it was new to us. We had nothing to compare it with. Particularly on the Barrack Square, one got some choice language directed at one, always with the suffix, sir. Rather sarcastically emphasised at the end. But on the whole, they were pretty good. But they were determined to have us. The spit and polish it was accented a great deal. Mind you, one or two who were a bit more well-heeled than I was used to pay the barrack room orderlies to do the boots, and the bayonet scabbards that we got first of all was smothered in grease, and they had to be brought up like patent leather. The barrack orderlies there did very well actually out of it, but with pressing trousers and polishing boots and what have you. They're very keen on that we should be smartly turned out. It was again another aspect of what the troops would required to do.
Were you still accommodated in the hotel?
Yes, first of all, and then that was a sort of recruit company, and then we moved to a bigger hotel near the station in Dunbar, the Bellevue Hotel. which was scrubbed out every Friday night from top to bottom. Another same aspect. The only light relief at that stage was that on Sundays, which was pretty well free time, they were fairly generous with weekend passes for those of us who lived near enough, and my folks lived in Monkseaton here. I think it was about 12 and 6 return on the train. That was about a week pay, because at the Roxburgh there was a great huge mirror at the end of the corridor which was cracked, and the company QBOD, CQMS lectured us, you know, that would have to be paid for, so there would be stoppages out of our pay and various other things, that the 14 shillings a week got reduced to 12 bob. What happened then? Oh yes, I was thinking about the Sundays. You couldn't get a drink at a pub unless you were a traveller. Well, they knew darn fine that we'd just come from 300 yards down the road, but you know, we signed the book and we were all right then. Not that there was a great deal of drinking, because none of us had a great deal of money. And 12 bob a week didn't go very far.
Were there any other leisure occupations? Activities?
Not a great deal. Occasional visits to the cinema. Church of England, Church of Scotland canteen was a godsend. Could get a scrambled egg on toast and a great big mug of tea or coffee for about 1 and 3 pence or something like that. No, what with the what with all the spit and polish, swatting up lecture notes, there wasn't a great deal of time. The odd guard duty and so on.
You did have to do guard duty, and how was that formed?
Well, we didn't have live ammunition. We had rifles and bayonets, and it was a guard of 4 there and a guard commander. And one of the officer instructors, who was orderly officer or something, would land at some ungodly hour of the morning to see that we all weren't asleep. We had a bad flu epidemic while we were there.
What were you guarding, by the way?
Oh, just the village. All the bods who were asleep, theoretically. There weren't any passwords. No. The flu epidemic, and this was the form, that those who went sick, and there were a lot of us. There were preventive measures. 6 o'clock in the morning, or 6:30 in the morning, out on the lawn behind the Bellevue Hotel for a gargling parade. Then those of us who were sick had to march, and this was winter 1940, had to march to the other end of the town to the barracks, to the MI room, and come back to light duties. And in the middle of this, there was no heating in this hotel at all. We used to get undressed, put pajamas on, and then put most of the clothes back on when we went to bed. But it did allow us a fire in an alcove over what had been the dining room or the ballroom in this hotel. And there would probably be a dozen and a half of us in there, huddled around a tiny little fire, feeling pretty rotten. And the company commander came in and asked if any of us cared to volunteer to go and help the Finns fight the Russians. But he didn't get any great response to that.
What time would this be? What date would this be?
February 40, I think. Yeah, it wasn't as far off. February, early March, maybe.
What was the accommodation? Was how many to a room, for example, in the hotel?
Oh, well, the rooms varied in size, but one, two. At the Bellevue, there were four of us. Not a very large room, as I say, no heating. Bare boards, of course, well scrubbed. And the blankets to be folded into an exact rectangle with the sheet showing just at the top of the pile with one wrap right round it. Kit inspections, of course.
And what form did they take?
Oh, everything you had laid out in a specific form on the bed, one blanket on the bed, the rest folded up, and the whole lot in a particular set order. I think we were given a plan at the outset to follow. It was no use trying the sort of thing that Abod tried later on, I remember. When he was asked about church, he said, one on, one off, one at the washer. Don't know what had happened to the third one, really.
If you were short of kit, what was the procedure?
Well, we hadn't had it long, and we knew darn fine not to get on the wrong side of the company sergeant major. So, while some may not have been exactly lined up to his satisfaction, it jolly well had to be all there. If stuff was lost or mislaid, you had to pay for a replacement.
Did you have much in the way of equipment being stolen by other people who had lost theirs, for example?
Not that I recollect, no. We did a lot of cycling. We all had cycles. We had a march to the barracks, collect cycles. When we went out on various occasions, and it had its own drill, grasping the handle, you know, and walk march, and then coming back to barracks, as we approached barracks, ride to attention, you know, back straight. And there were some bods who couldn't ride a bike. But they had to darn well learn. And then...
Did you have to mount the cycle to numbers?
Oh, yes. Yes, what was it? Walk march out of the barracks. And then when everybody cleared the barrack gates, prepare to mount. And... ride to attention, and then outside the town, ride at ease. Those of us who couldn't drive had to learn to drive. Requisitioned cars, civilian cars, painted khaki, first of all. And then we had to learn to ride motorcycles. And in Belhaven Bay, north of, well, no, it's not north, the way the coast ran, it would be west of Dunbar, on the Dunbar-Edinburgh road. There was an old race course, disused race course. So we all had to go round that, and I was under Edstone. Big 500cc BSA, with no clearance whatsoever under the crankcase. I envied some of the others who got Nortons and Matchless, where they were well off the ground. And there was a wet and muddy patch round it. And I think after finishing up under this bike about four times, I'd had enough. The rest were who had finished that part of the course, then went on to over the dunes. Well, I decided that there was a call of nature to be answered, and there were some derelict racecourse buildings and sheds and whatnot. So I took my leave, and I made it spin out. So much so that when I came out, the instructor from the MT section said, "Where the hell have you been?" I said, "Horror." Had to go behind to attend to the call of nature. He says, "Well, have you been round the course?" I said, "On the flat, I haven't been over the dunes." He says, "Right. Silly buggers have left me with two motorbikes. The rest, taking the other motorcyclist off in the truck with the rest of the bods." He said, "Do you think you're going to ride it back into Dunbar? Go on, get on. Let's see you ride round." And he followed me into Dunbar, and he passed me out on the on the strength of that. So I chickened out of the, well, that's a modern expression, but I got out of the awkward bit. I'd spent enough time underneath that damn bike already. When eventually, later on, after I'd joined the Durhams, I was taught to ride a motorbike by an ex-TT bod who had his own big, bruff superior there. And I finished up on the regimental motorcycle team because I'd been taught properly. But with some of the bikes, it was as much as I could do to heave them back up onto the stand. What next at Dunbar? We're getting pretty well through then.
Did you have other duties other than guard duties to perform?
No.
Where were you fed?
Oh, in the hotel dining room. I was there introduced to a curious dish which I've gathered since is popular with the Scots. There would be a big metal dish of mince for table accommodating about a dozen maybe. And on top of the mince, there would be a dozen poached eggs. which looked, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter. We were so darn hungry that we'd have eaten anything. Grub wasn't bad. Wasn't bad at all, really. The cooks there were pretty good.
What meals a day did you get?
Three main meals. There would be breakfast. Oh, I don't know. We have breakfast? No, we had PT before breakfast. And breakfast was either 7:30 or 8:00, something like that. A lunch meal, if we're away out in the countryside, it was either what we would now call a packed lunch, or it was brought out in hay boxes to keep warm. Tea was usually doorsteps, so thick. Can't remember much about tea meals. And then there would be a massive great jar of pickles and lots of mousetrap cheese laid on for anybody who wanted a snack later on in the evening.
Did you have any form of nappy or canteen?
No, not provided by the army. Church of Scotland up the road, that was the standby.
Discipline and punishments for wrongdoing or mistakes or whatever at this time, what form did they take?
I don't recall many people stepping out of line. I remember getting a tremendous strip torn off me when there were the company commander in the hotel before we went out. We were acting as the enemy in an exercise for the rest of the crowd at the Yacht 2. So we had blank ammunition. And I let one off in the hallway of the hotel while he was... Fortunately, it was the rifle was pointing at the ceiling, so nobody got the wadding in their face or anything like that. But there was certainly no absence without leave that I can recall at all. And you made darn sure that you were never late on parade. It was verbal, and these Scots NCOs were past masters of the art.
Did you have lectures?
Yes.
On what subjects?
Certain amount on things like what was classified as man management. What else?
What was the basis of man management in the army from the officer's point of view?
Basically, getting to know the men. And you weren't there to order them about. You were there to order them about on specific occasions when it was necessary to get something done and done quickly. And